This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I should tell you right off the bat that the voice is a little rough today. I actually caught a cold on Saturday. I have been doing so well. Oh, and by the way, it's also raining. So you may hear windshield wipers going and rain in the background. I've been doing so well for the last several months without catching a cold or anything like that, just by, you know, washing my hands and kind of staying away from sick people and trying to eat real healthy. And I just had a little cold just sat down and grabbed me on Saturday. I had actually violated a couple of my little principles, but that's what you get when you violate your principles. So I've kind of been fighting this cold all week. And I think I'm starting to kind of get on the downside of it. I'm still a little bit clogged up, and I may be gargling and coughing every once in a while as we do this, but we'll be just fine. It is episode 28. It's episode 28. And I actually had another topic in queue to talk about today. At some point, I'd really like to spend a little time talking about fractals, because I think there's something really interesting that we can learn about fractals, but that's going to require a bit more research. And frankly, this week I didn't feel like much research. So I just kind of thought, you know, what else can we talk about? And then I realized that I had had a fairly interesting occurrence happened this week, and the more I kind of thought about it, the more I realized that there was something substantial to talk about there. To start it all up, I should, let me back up several months. It's, as you progress along in life, it gets to be kind of an interesting thing to see how your interests change and see how you feel what is valuable changes. For quite a while in my life, I really liked the whole idea of apologetics, that you get out there and you reason with people and you try to help them to see, you know, that there might be some rational reasons to consider the existence of God and blah, 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 blah. And you get together and you challenge them intellectually, and they challenge you intellectually, and you have these exchanges. And I was really into that kind of thing for a lot of years. I have to say, now that I'm getting older, and I think I understand more about how human belief systems actually work, that I've sort of just lost a whole lot of interest in having a lot of discussions about stuff like that. For instance, several months ago, I was talking to a buddy, and he was wanting my opinion on something. He had said that he and his wife had gone to a church service, and there was a speaker at the church service that had made some statements along the line, you need to understand that God sent your soul here for a purpose, and you need to find out what that purpose is, and yada, yada, yada. And very much, it sounded like, from what he reported to me, very much believed in the idea of the pre-existence of the soul. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with that, the idea of, there's really a big question in theology. One of the big questions in theology is, where does the soul come from? Does God dispatch it? Does he from heaven whenever a human child is conceived or at some point in the pregnancy process? Does he create a new soul? Does simply the process of conception create a new soul? I mean, there's all these discussions about how that works. And so my friend and his wife had gone home, and they had had this big discussion about this that evening. And so we were chatting, and he said, what do you think about all that? And I looked at him and it smiled, and I said, man, you know, honestly, I think that's all just mind candy. He said, what do you mean mind candy? I said, you know, ultimately, okay, it's fun to think about and talk about, but it's not really going to make any substantive difference, really. And he said, well, no, I don't think that's mind candy. But so we talked about it for a while, and hopefully by the time I'm all done with this, you'll see what I really mean by mind candy and substantive difference. And we had chatted about that. Flash forward to this week. I had actually been contacted by a distant cousin who has had a long and distinguished career in missions, specifically working with music and missions. Really a very interesting life he has had in terms of working with music and missions. And he had gotten in touch with me, said he was going to be in town, would love to get together. I, of course, told him we'd love to get together too. And so we actually got together Monday night at my mom and dad's, and we talked about missions and the stuff that he's been involved with. And he has been involved with some very interesting projects, specifically understanding that people's groups have obviously wildly different ways of approaching music. Wow, we're starting to get into a louder storm here, so I'll speak up a little bit in case I'm starting to get drowned out by the rain. Obviously, people's groups approach music in many, many different ways. One of the things he was talking about is while in the West, we tend to layer our complexities in terms of harmony, in Africa, they tend to layer their complexity in terms of rhythms. And there's all kinds of different tuning systems in the world. And if you grow up in a culture with those music systems, you relate at a very profound and fundamental level to those things. And so his goal has been to go in and the people that work with him to go in and work with indigenous people groups in their form of music and to create worship music according to their indigenous forms and then record that. And that, I think it's a great idea, and they've been very successful in terms of helping people use their own indigenous forms of music to worship God and to come become closer to God, as opposed to what has been tried in the past in some missions movements of, we're going to come over there, we're going to tell you what to believe, and then we're going to tell you how to worship, and you really need to worship with Western music. And it, I mean, it's a great thing. I mean, I was really, really fascinated to listen and hear him. The other thing that he told us about was the work that he is doing with India and how he has been very much drawn to India and how there is this whole caste system in India, which I had heard about before. But he was saying there's something like 300 million people who are in this caste system as untouchables. So they're on the lowest rung, the lowest of the lowest rung of society with really no hope of ever getting out of that. Because this caste system, while I think it's quote-unquote illegal at this point, nonetheless is deeply ingrained in the society in India. And so typically if someone is born into an untouchable caste, that's pretty much it. And he was telling us about the efforts of missions to work with this caste system, and one of the things that he was working on was a curriculum using music to teach songs to children with accompanying workbooks who are part of this caste system to really help them understand that they have value. And he actually had the book there that they've developed, and my wife was looking through it, and I mean, it looked really cool, and I was really enjoying the time that we spent together. Well, what was interesting about all of this is that I had actually gotten a call from a buddy of mine prior to that, and he said, hey, one of the local universities is going to have a talk. A guy is coming in to do a talk are you interested in getting together tonight and going to the talk? And I said, well, it sounds interesting. Under normal circumstances, definitely I would be, but I'm getting together with this cousin. And so he said, that's fine, I'll give you a report. So he went to the talk, and then I got this report later. And maybe it's because I have a cold, and so maybe my tolerance level is a bit reduced. Or maybe it's just because I'm getting old and curmudgeonly, but I just found it a very interesting contrast with how I could have spent my Monday evening. I did spend my Monday evening listening to a cousin tell me about the wonderful work that he's doing with music in indigenous peoples and helping them to worship God and helping them to know their value in God and to come closer to God, and in my opinion, creating an environment of success for them. Or I could have gone and listened to this man, this visiting lecturer, going through a discussion of open theism. I don't know how to pronounce this next one. Molinism versus Calvinism and Arminianism. And in case you don't recognize any of those terms, Calvinism is the doctrinal approach that talks about the predestination of the saints and how that God, in his foreknowledge, predestinates and decides, decides who will be saved and who won't be saved. And Arminianism that says, no, God has foreknowledge of who's going to be saved and not saved, but man actually chooses because man has free will. And open theism, which basically, as I understand it, says, no, God doesn't predestinate, and in fact, he doesn't really know the future when you get right down to it. He is discovering the future the same as we are. Or this middle ground of this Molinism, I think it's pronounced, where God has a sort of middle foreknowledge where he knows the past and the present, and as for the future, he knows all the iterations of the past, of the future, because he knows all the potential choices that we might make. And therefore, he can see among all the potential choices that we might make, and he knows the choices that we might make. And then so according to that, then somehow he chooses those who will be saved. And my buddy did, I felt, a very good job sort of writing a synopsis to myself and another friend, whom he had invited as well, who had another appointment, as to what this guy discussed and the approaches this guy took to it. And frankly, I found it interesting to read because I am just in the process of... Whoa, sorry, lots of road construction. I'm in the process of gathering in the beta reader content for my latest novel, which is That Faded Shore, which is a dark comedy on free will determinism. On time travel determinism and the free will paradox. I mean, so there's this, it's a topic that I'm interested in. But I gotta say that it's probably just because I was tired, but as I was reading through my buddy's email and reflecting on this really cool evening, I have to agree with my buddy when he said at the very first paragraph, "Gentlemen, in some ways, you didn't miss much." Because I just had flashbacks to our auto mechanic, a story that I tell on our auto mechanic from years ago when I bought this car for my daughter. I bought an older car that was a tank as her first car because I wanted her in a tank when she was really learning how to drive. And so she had this thing. And the first thing she did is she lost control of it on an icy road and put the car into a telephone pole. And I discovered the car was still drivable, and so I got another fender and put it on it and got a little tail light and wired it in. And my daughter was going, "Dad," I said, "look, it's still drivable. You can drive this." And then she ran a red light and another car hit her and it bent the axle, and I got an axle. I just keep fixing this car as opposed to getting a new car because, you know, she's still learning to drive. I want her in a tank. Well, after the second accident and my mechanic fixed it, he was a great mechanic. He's no longer doing that. He retired. He's a great mechanic. He said, "Now, you got to understand," he said, "that the wheel bearing housing back," or whatever he called it, he said, "you know, it's bent. So what it's going to do is it's going to wear out wheel bearings on you." And I said, "So do you think I should get one of those and we could put that on?" And he looked at me with a straight face and he said, "What's the point?" And I thought, you know, I think he's right. What's the point? It's an old car. Let it wear out some wheel bearings. Eventually, I'm going to get her a better car. And I got to tell you, when I'm reading through this email from my buddy about all these things this lecturer had talked about, trying to disassemble this and disassemble that and the other, and I just thought, you know, really, what's the point? I know that we feel like we have to have doctrinal purity, and that we need to make sure everybody toes the line on doctrine. But you know, frankly, I think one of the reasons that we have to toe the line so hard on doctrine and we got to make sure everybody believes the right thing is because we haven't discipled people and just caused them to be mature. I should have pulled out the verse, but I didn't. But there's one spot where Paul talks about wanting people to become mature, so that they are not tossed about by every wind of doctrine that comes in. Because if you become mature and you understand God's love for you, and in my mind, you understand the difference between the flesh and the spirit, and can differentiate those things which are driven by flesh and by spirit, you know, that's going to keep you in His care and in His love. And whether or not He has predestinated you to be saved, or whether or not you made a choice to be saved, or whether or not He had no idea whether you were going to be saved, or whether or not He had some middle foreknowledge as to whether you were going to be saved, ultimately, while it's cute and it's mind candy, and it's fun to think about, I think a whole lot of times we get really wrapped up in wanting to talk and know this stuff when there's other things we could focus on. I'm getting my mail. One moment. And the rain has actually died down out here a little bit. And, you know, in thinking about all this stuff, I'm not saying these aren't things that we should think about and mull over and those kind of things, because it is interesting to think about. But I think if we spend enough of our time sitting and mulling and arguing and going round and around about these things, and we forsake the deeper issues of grace and of mercy and of gentleness and kindness, I think we've really shortchanged ourselves and we've lost something. My dad used to say that when we get to heaven, that the test that is going to be at the Bema judgment when the saints are judged, that test is going to be very, very simple. I'm backing into my garage and it is raining and a little misty, and I'm hoping I will back into my garage without running into something. My dad used to say that that test is really very simple. And my dad has taught theology year after year after year in Bible colleges. So it's not that he dismisses theology or does not see a place for theology and all that kind of thing. But my dad used to say, really, when we get to heaven and we are standing before Christ, the test that is going to be set before us really isn't going to be systematic theology. He thought that the test would be very simple, and it would basically be 1 Corinthians 13. Because Paul says there, if I speak with the tongues of men and angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but I have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. And here's where my dad says the test starts. First, verse 4. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrong. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres. And my dad used to say, that's going to be the thing. We're going to put our names in there, and we're going to see how we measure up. Phil is patient. Phil is kind. Phil does not envy. Phil does not boast and is not proud. Phil is not rude and is not self-seeking, etc., etc., etc. And I guess if given the choice between playing with mind candy and trying to decide whether or not the soul is pre-existent, playing with mind candy, trying to figure out exactly what does God know about us and how does he predestine us and, you know, do we have any will involved or does God have it? Given the choice of doing that a lot or given the choice of focusing my life on being kind and gentle, creating an environment of success for myself and for others because of how I move through life. You know, I think I'll just stick with the other. Although I find the former interesting. I find that true joy and true life comes in the study of the latter. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.